What's up, guys? Hey, sorry that my sound was not turned on, but luckily I caught it immediately. And you probably also can't hear my wonderful guests wh who I will intro while I am fixing the sound there. This always happens when I go between my laptop and my desktop because it gets set to the sound from my laptop and then it tries to find those same drivers on my desktop and it can't find them, and it's like, oh, we're just not gonna put anything there. We're just gonna like just do nothing. So that's how that works. But you can see we have joining us on the Falcoholic Live this evening for our Falcons training camp Q&A session with our lovely, very successful, very supportive patrons. Joining us is Dave Choate, the man himself at the Falcoholic. Dave, how are we doing tonight?
Doing great, doing great. So excited that we have preseason football, and that excitement will last until 6:30 on Friday.
Yes, I will love that first series, and then it's gonna be back to the simulator after that. So at least his name worked. I'm gonna have to come up with something for Felipe Franks in the fourth quarter. But at least maybe he'll go play tight end at some point too, which will be very exciting. I'm sure we'll have Felipe Franks questions tonight. Also joining us, Adnan Ikichat, Say Which Way. Adnan, how we doing?
Doing very well, ready to talk some football today and shit, all week. I'll be on shows all week with you this week, Kevin.
Yes, we got a full docket this week, guys. We're no longer, of course, at training camp, although Adnan was there on Saturday. I'm sure we'll get his full takes from that practice on tomorrow, Wednesday's show. We'll have a full regular Wednesday live show for you guys. But yeah, we are here to answer your training camp questions. We're gonna have, like I said, that live show on Wednesday night, which is tomorrow. For those of you watching live, welcome, Ollie. How you doing, man? Appreciate you. Ollie, you're in the UK. I think you're actually from the UK. Unlike the guy that was pretending to be from the UK, I believe Ollie is actually from the UK. So shout out to Ollie, because I'm sure it's really late over there right now. So big shout out.
It's midnight over there right now.
Yeah, so big shout out. Appreciate that, Ollie. And everyone else, I know we got a ton of questions from the Discord and from the Patreon stuff. So we'll make sure to cover that stuff tonight. And then for those of you here live, feel free to throw your questions in the chat. We will get to those as well. But yeah, let's dive right in. I know Ollie is the actual UK guy, confirmed real UK guy, Ollie. Okay, good to know. So we'll start with the topic of the day, which is Roquan Smith. We got Rodders underscore four on the Discord with this question. Any chance we could actually make a move for Roquan Smith? That might actually be Ollie because it says he's coming from the UK. So that might just be his Discord name, which would be funny. But maybe that is your question, Ollie. Yeah, so do we think that there's a realistic chance that Roquan Smith could come to Atlanta, or do we think it's impossible? So it is actually Ollie. So it's perfect because Ollie's actually here, so we can answer his question first. I think that makes a lot of sense from that angle as well. Dave, I'll go to you first. A lot of talk about Roquan Smith today. What do you think about the actual chances of something like that happening?
Yeah, I was all set to do my usual, hate and ask thing that I do, where I write an article being like, oh, what's the possibility of a trade? And then end it with, there's no chance. But the more I thought about it, the more I think it's probably unlikely, but it could happen. Terry Fontenot, I think, has been cautious and patient to this point because he's had to be. He wants to get this team on a better footing, with the cap, first of all. But also, everything from his New Orleans background suggests that he's not going to be shy about spending money and potentially draft capital to improve this team. So I think if you look at it, it's a question of how satisfied are the Falcons with their current inside linebacker group, and what do they want to do with their cap windfall next year? Because if you think that, a guy who's only 25 years old is somebody you want to keep long term, you can think you can make that work financially. And you think he's a big upgrade over what you have, which he probably is, obviously. I think there's a legitimate possibility. Plus, Ryan Pace, is like tugging on his shirt sleeve and going, please give me a bear. So I think probably he'll end up staying in Chicago on a new deal, or it'll be another team blowing away Chicago with an offer. But I would not say this one's impossible. So
Yeah,
we'll
I
say a
agree.
30% chance.
Yeah, I mean, because of the Chicago connection, the chance is higher. Because of the existing relationship with the front office, it's more likely that the Falcons could get an offer in that would be, like, accepted. But again, like, and I'll get Adnan's take before I go in detail in it. But yeah, I mean, I think there are reasons that you could see that it makes sense and also reasons that it probably doesn't. But Adnan, I'll let you get your take in first on the possibility of Roquan Smith coming back home to Georgia.
Oh, he is a former dog after all.
Yep.
I don't think it's likely, to be honest. I know we have the Ryan Pace connection. We had Cordero Patterson lobbying hard for it on Twitter, even changing his profile picture to Roquan when he was playing for Georgia. And I saw this very funny tweet saying, oh, like, someone tell Ryan Pace to actually get one of the good Chicago Bears for a change instead of all the guys we've been getting. But no, just for all the reasons they've listed up, and I'm not saying it's, like, completely impossible, but just looking at where this team is currently in their rebuild versus – the kind of money that Roquan Smith will be commanding next year. He'll be a free agent, an unrestricted free agent. He'll be 26, so he'll still be in his prime, but he's probably going to be looking for record setting linebacker money, as is his right. And I just don't see the Falcons being in that position right now to spend that draft capital and that salary cap, even though they will have a lot of cap space next offseason. I don't see them doing that for a linebacker who's, even though he is still in his prime. But that feels like one of those moves that you make when you're kind of just a step or two away from the World Series. It's like the move that the Rams made last trade deadline for Von Miller, where it's like, all right, we're very, very close, and this is the move that could put us over the top. The Falcons are still very far away from getting to that point where, you know, they're looking for that final trade piece. So, you know, I think Fontenot will remain cautious, and I think, you know, maybe a few years from now we'll be in a position to make that kind of move.
Yeah, I mean, I the reason I could see it is because I think we know that the middle linebacker in Dean Pease's defense is very, very important. We've seen when he's had the most success, he's had that, like, elite guy back there, like a Ray Lewis, for example. And I guess you could argue, you know, is Roquan Smith that type of guy? Is he that level of player? He's obviously very good, elite coverage linebacker, really good blitzer. You know, he would seem to fit sort of what the Falcons would be wanting there. But the question is, like, are they going to prioritize an off-ball linebacker with... They will have money next year, certainly, so they could probably afford to make this deal work. And in terms of draft capital, I don't think it would be that outlandish in terms of the cost to trade for him, but, you know, would you be willing to give up a third-rounder plus a massive contract for an off-ball linebacker? That's the thing that I get caught up on. I just don't know that that's something that they're going to want to do. They did just add Troy Anderson. They've got, you know, a pretty solid group in here already. Now, if you could, like, get the Bears to take Deion Jones in the deal as well and get out of that situation at the same time, that's where this could be more realistic, because you would be getting some salary cap relief while taking on, you know, while getting a big contract going to Roquan Smith, but you're basically, like, swapping it out for savings. So I think it's possible, but I don't think it makes a ton of sense for where they are in terms of the team building process.
I would think that Deion Jones would maybe even have to be in the deal because Roquan is looking for a new contract right now. And sure, the Falcons can structure a contract for him. Let's say in theory they do trade for him without Deion Jones being involved. They can structure a contract to have a very minimal cap hit and 2022 and for Roquan to get his money. But I don't think that Terry Fontenot wants to do something like that, just given everything he's done to this point of, you know, getting himself out of that hole of, you know, of cap space hell. So I would think he'd be very, very gun shy about giving anyone a tiny, tiny cap hit the first year and then having that just blow up over the next season, especially if it's a contract that's you know, that would be a record-setting deal for linebackers, which is what we're expecting. So I would expect that, you know, Deion Jones would have to be in that deal. And I mean, I'm sure the Falcons would love to put Deion Jones in that deal, but, you know, I don't think the Bears would be interested in that.
Yeah, I agree. So unlikely, it's a possibility, but there's some stuff they would have to do to make it work, basically, is what I think we're sort of arriving at. I know we had a question from Kevin Dogg about our thoughts on Desmond Ridder at this point. So, I'll let you get the first crack at this one. You've seen Ridder in person now. What do you think about Desmond Ridder so far?
He's been all right. Like, you know, he's been solid. Like, don't get me wrong, but he hasn't been as good as Marcus Mariota has been. And I mean, it's clear that this front office and coaching staff immediately announced at the very beginning of training camp, Marcus Mariota is going to be the guy. There is no quarterback competition, and you know, Mariota has gotten all the run with the ones. Ritter's had some of his rookie mistakes here and there, and I mean, Mariota's had his mistakes as well. But Ridder has clearly been the second best quarterback a training camp behind Mariota. I know it's a hit to some of the people that were expecting him to come in and be Matt Ryan right away. But you know, that's a very, very rare thing, which we saw in 2008. And I know that we've gotten spoiled over the past decade since Matt Ryan with rookie quarterbacks coming in and just immediately starting from day one. But it's clear that Ridder is going to need some time. I don't know if I'm still predicting that he'll be inserted sometime later on in this season, but it's very clear that Marcus Mariota is going to be the week one starter barring injury, and that he'll be the starter for a while after week one as well. But you know, Ridder, there's been some promise. He's had some really nice throws. He's done some really nice things with his feet out there. He's going to be that bit of a dual threat. Like, he's not going to be Kyler Murray or Lamar Jackson out there, but he's going to force the defense to definitely take note of his rushing ability as well as his passing ability. But you know, he'll be on the bench learning for a while.
Yeah. And I think with Ridder, like, I think he's going to look pretty good in the preseason, in my opinion. Like, I don't think he's gonna be a bad preseason quarterback. I think he'll actually be effective. I think he's like fairly ready to play. He hasn't been as good as Marcus Mariota, and I think Marcus Mariota, that's why he's the starter at this point, you know, like that's why he's sort of the unquestioned starter. But I think Ritter's like not that far behind Mariota. I think that we'll get a chance to see him in the preseason a lot, and I think he'll probably look good. Like, he's going to look better than, like, you know, Jake Luton and, you know, all these guys from that we saw in the Jaguars versus Raiders game. Like, I would not be surprised if he looks better than, like, every single quarterback that played in that game. But I don't know that he's not really going to challenge Mariota at this point. We'll see when he gets on the field in terms of the regular season. I do think it will happen at some point, but so far, like, I've seen what I want to see from him. That's about right now. It's like he's like a backup. Like, the fact that he's probably right now like a reliable NFL backup quarterback as a rookie, like a third round rookie too, this isn't like some, you know, top 10 pick. Like, I think that's a good start for him, and that's why we haven't seen the Falcons feel like they need to add another quarterback, because they're confident that if Ridder had to go into the game, that he would be able to run the offense and that sort of stuff. So I think that's a good sign. I don't think that there's anything to worry about with Ridder, or that he's not performing up to expectations, but Mariota's going to be the starter week one. Dave, I know you haven't necessarily seen Ridder in person, but was there anything else you wanted to add on Ridder before we moved on?
Yeah, I just think, like, we'll have to be patient with him, but I think it's worth noting, like, I can't remember if it was Torrey McElhaney with the Falcons wrote a story about why the Falcons kind of fell in love with Ridder, and it's got Dwayne Jones with the team scouting department saying, we fell in love with him, like, last year, right? And so, like, I think before Arthur Blank kind of blew up everything with the Watson pursuit this offseason, that the plan was to have Ritter come to Atlanta, be drafted with Ryan at the helm. And so the fact that it's Mariota instead of Ryan, you know, it still was never a situation where you expected Ritter to step in and start this year. But I think there's also clear signs that this team really does believe in him as a talent, as a leader, as a quarterback. So I think we're just going to need to take some time to see that pay off. But I do think this has been the plan for a while. So as long as he's looking competent now instead of like a total mess, I think things are on track.
Yeah, I agree. Sort of in that same vein, we had a question about Marcus Mariota from Torin Bix, who's German. He won't be able to make it tonight, but he did have some questions. So thank you for the questions, Torin. He says, I was very skeptical about our QB situation after trading Ryan, like Dave just mentioned. However, after what we've seen so far in training camp, I'm cautiously optimistic about Mariota and his ability to surprise us. So how probable is it, in our view, that he might rejuvenate his career and become maybe more than a one-year backstop? I guess I'll go first here because I've seen him a lot. And then I'm going to Dave. So Dave, you know, get ready. You know, you're on deck. Yeah. No. But yeah, I mean, I've been very impressed with Mariota. I think he's been very sharp. I think he's been very in command, accurate, not to the level of a Matt Ryan in terms of his accuracy, but certainly good enough. I think he looks very comfortable leaving the pocket, picking up stuff with his legs. That's somewhere where Desmond Ritter is still not comfortable, and you can tell. I don't think that Mariota will provide the same level of passing ability that Ryan did ever, but I think that there's a chance that if we can upgrade the offensive line, you know, that's still a very dubious proposition at this point. We'll see what happens over the rest of training camp and how these guys look, and if we get growth from center and right tackle, and maybe Elijah Wilkinson is a good left guard, or even an average left guard would be huge. But I think if the offensive line is better, we know the passing game weapons are better, like drastically so, for Mariota this year, that Mariota with his rushing ability and the offense hopefully being in better shape around him, this could be a comparable offense to last year, maybe better overall, even though the passing game maybe isn't as deadly as it is with Ryan at the helm. And if he does do that, if he plays well and stays healthy and looks great, you know, I think there is a chance that they do keep him on his team option next year. It's not very expensive for a starting quarterback. It's like $14.5 million or something like that, which is a bargain for starting quarterback. So like they would happily pay that if he was going to be their starter. I don't know that they'll go out of their way for that to happen. Like, I think if they really like what they've seen from Ritter, they may just let him go. They may decide to just pay him the $14.5 million. Do another training camp battle and see if Ritter can beat him out or whatever. I mean, this is all within the realm of possibility, but I do think that there is a realistic chance that Mariota becomes a long-term starter. I don't think it's a high chance, but at least could he be here for a year or two while they bring in maybe another rookie next year if Ritter's not what they want, or if they decide, like, you know, we don't want to spend our top five pick on a quarterback in the next year's class, then we're going to just roll with some combination of Mariota and Ritter again next year and take, you know, Will Anderson in the top stuff, then that's maybe what they'll do. But I think that's a good chance that that happens. And then we have now Will McFadden joining us. Will, how was your dinner?
That was great. It was a breakfast for dinner. So
terrific. You
can never turn one of those down. One of my all-time favorites.
Oh yeah, Brenner is undefeated, so I don't blame you for going to catch that Brenner before popping in. But we were just talking about the chance that Marcus Mariota could possibly be a starter for more than just this year. So I'm curious, you've got a chance to see him in camp a little bit. What do you think about that possibility for Mariota?
Well, part of me wants to say, can we at least see if he can be a starter throughout the entirety of year one first? But
No, you got to put it on paper right now, your take. So,
I mean, I kind of think that it's going to be a little bit of a rock and a hard place situation for Marcus Mariota, because if they are bad, right, then they're going to be in a position to take one of these top quarterbacks. And I don't think that even the most optimistic among us with Marcus thinks that he is a long-term answer. And if you have the opportunity, regardless kind of what Desmond Ridder does, if you have the opportunity to kind of maybe stockpile a truly top talent at quarterback, like I think that's something that they would seriously consider. On the flip side, if, you know, Marcus Mariota does well, kind of keeps them in it like they were last year, but maybe it's a bit more of a team effort like it was a little bit last year, but you see some of these young players really start to make some plays. The team, the floor of the team kind of grows up maybe around Marcus as he's manning the ship. Then I think you look at a scenario where the Falcons say, okay, we've got a little bit of a semblance of like what we want to do here, but is the quarterback now holding us back? And that's where I think you would either see them seriously take a look at Desmond Ridder, kind of like an Alex Smith, Patrick Mahomes situation, not comparing the rookie to Patrick Mahomes, but like that, where you had the veteran bridge guy for a year kind of there to do it. And then you moved on and put, you know, the young guy in place, or they're going to have a lot of free agency money and they could just go get the next disgruntled quarterback that wants to move homes and say, look, you know, we've got back to back 7 and 10 seasons or whatever, you know, they could have after this year, if that's the best case scenario. Then you try to convince a veteran to come here with some young talent and maybe be the face of the turnaround and more of the successful face of the turnaround.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense to me. I think that's more, it's more likely than not, certainly, that Mariota is not the starter here next year, but there is a possibility for that to happen. Yeah, Dave, Adnan, either of you, Dave, I know you, I said you were on deck, but Will came in, you know, so I had to get him in here. But Dave, did you have anything you wanted to add on Mariota's chances here long term?
No, just I think he's sort of the ideal quarterback given the situation for like stabilizing the position this year, being there for Ridder. I think there's a lot of like, there's always a lot of talk about like veteran quarterbacks mentoring younger quarterbacks, unless they're like Tannehill and they're like, screw that. But I think Mariota is actually that guy, and he's clearly doing that for Ridder. And I think all of that makes him ideal for this year. I cannot see them next year with their expectations, the potential that they'd be coming off a fifth straight losing season with all the money they're about to spend, kind of going into next year with him at the helm again, unless he's, you know, completely resurrected his career. He's a Pro Bowler or something like that. So I think the chances of him being here beyond this year are slim. But I am glad he's here this year.
Yeah. Yeah, I like it. I think the signing made a lot of sense. I think he's one of the most interesting quarterbacks in terms of writing about, certainly, that we could have brought in. Imagine if we were having to talk about Sam Darnold in a QB competition right now. You know, couldn't be me. Couldn't be me.
We will. So.
We will. Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah, yeah.
I'm really happy with the Mariota signing as a stopgap. But just given the structure of this contract, I'd be absolutely shocked if Mariota was still here next year. I think they knew exactly what they were doing in structuring it to where, you know, most of that cap hit is in year two and most of the cap savings is in year two as well. I think there's only one of two scenarios in which Mariota is here next season. One of them is what Dave just mentioned, if he just absolutely has a career year and is, you know, a Pro Bowler and, you know, leads the Falcons to great prosperity, maybe a postseason appearance. And I know there's some fans that have that expectation. I personally wouldn't. And the other scenario is that Desmond Ridder, when he does get his chance, and I'm fully convinced that Ridder will get his chance at some point this season, if Desmond Ridder just looks like an absolute abject disaster, and that's something that none of us want to see, but if Ridder is just terrible and the team is not in position to draft one of those big name quarterbacks in this draft, Bryce Young, CJ Stroud, then I can see the team going into next year being like, all right, we'll run it back with Mariota. And also, this is if Will's scenario doesn't come to fruition and there's a disgruntled quarterback that comes available as well. But other than those two scenarios, I don't think that the team passes up on $12 million in cap savings next offseason. I don't think that they want Mariota to be their starter next year. I think that they want Desmond Ridder to take over, or to have, you know, that big name next rookie sensation quarterback taking over next offseason. I think this is a stopgap year in every sense of the word. And, you know, I think as the team transitions away from this and into being a better team, I think they'll transition away from Marcus Mariota as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that makes sense. All right, we got from Andrew on the Patreon page. What do you guys think about the recent signings? So I assume he's talking about Michael Pruitt, the tight end, coming in. So, yeah, I and Abdullah, the defensive tackle. I don't know too much about Abdullah. You know, I think he's someone that's being brought in to shore up the depth chart, and I think he had some flashes during one of Abdullah Anderson. He had some flashes during one of his seasons, but so far hasn't done a whole lot. So we'll see if he can sort of make an impression on the coaching staff over the next couple weeks. But the one that I think is definitely interesting is Michael Pruitt, who was a guy that I really liked coming out of the draft. But he has such an interesting and I think rare career arc for a tight end, as a guy who came out of, I think it was FCS level, as like a really productive receiver, undersized sort of tight end. And got to the NFL with everyone questioning, like, basically, oh, he can't block, but, like, you know, can he be a really good receiver? Didn't really ever catch a lot of passes in the NFL, but sort of carved out a long career now as a blocking specialist, sort of an athletic blocker who has obviously upside as a receiver as well. I mean, he has, I think he ran in the 4.5s as a tight end, which is really fast. So he's a very interesting player, in my opinion. I like him. I think he actually has a legitimate chance of taking a roster spot from someone else. I'm a little bit interested in who he was brought in to compete with specifically, or maybe it's just they wanted more talent in the group overall. You know, I think he's sort of more competing for that Parker Hesse, John Fitzpatrick mold of player, as opposed to like a Firkser, or I mean, he's obviously not competing with Kyle Pitts. So, that's an interesting one to me, but I will open the floor here as well. Will, did you have any takes about Michael Pruitt?
You know, I generally try not to get too excited about players who are signed in training camp kind of as the result of an injury to somebody else at the position. Yeah. Generally, those guys, you know, not to disparage them, but like generally those aren't the guys who are at the very top of your 53-man roster. Yeah. That being said, Michael Pruitt, I think it is interesting that they did go out and add more of a blocking element at the position. I do wonder if Felipe Franks' kind of performance early in camp has them feeling like, all right, we've got receiving tight end fully covered. You know, we've got three guys who kind of check the box in that area. Maybe this is a little bit of an indicator of how they are feeling about the guys you just mentioned, John Fitzpatrick, you know, Parker Hesse, John Rain, those types of guys. You know, how are they performing so far in camp? So I think it's more depth. I think it's more competition. But generally, when you kind of come into a camp at this point, you're a little bit behind everybody else. It becomes a little bit harder to really stand out, especially with preseason games right around the corner. Like, he's going to have to be, I think, really, really solid from here on out from the get-go to kind of really make a push for a spot on the roster.
Yeah, it's a unique situation for him too, because this is a guy that spent, you know, 3 years with Arthur Smith. So he does have that existing relationship and experience in the scheme. So it does sort of lend itself to him hitting the ground running. But unlike all these other guys we've seen signed in training camp, you know, this is a guy who started 9 games last year, played in all 16, you know, played more than 50% of his snaps on offense and stuff like that. So like, well, I think it was 43% technically, but he did miss some games at the end of the year. So he's a little bit more interesting in that way, but I agree with you. Normally, people that are signed at this time, it's going to be a really uphill battle for them to make it. So I don't disagree with you there. Anybody else have some hot, spicy Michael Pruitt or Abdullah Anderson takes for the people?
One thing interesting with Michael, though, and what you mentioned as something that's going his way, he has experience with Arthur Smith with the Titans. I think he was getting run with the veterans today. Like, you know, right off the bat, he was out there. And I think this was from Rothstein's notes from training camp today. So I do think that he's, even though he got a late start, and like Will said, it's never a good sign when a guy's signed this late into camp. I think he'll have a legitimate opportunity just given the position he's fighting it out for.
Mm-hmm.
It's for that Arthur Smith patented blocking specialist tight end that Lee Smith was red zone target Lee Smith was there for last year before retirement. Maybe this does tell me, like you guys were mentioning, that they just don't like what they've seen from the guys in that position, Fitzpatrick, Kessie, and John Rain. And I will say, I'm sure you guys weren't expecting a John Rain take today, but I do have a John Rain take, and that did not really look that good on Saturday in special teams drills. They had that little gunner drill going on the far field, on the right field, and John Rain, in both of his reps, the first time he got blown by Jared Bernhardt, the former lacrosse player, and the second rep was against Nate Landman, and Landman just absolutely stood him up in a blocking drill where he was the blocker and Rain was the gunner. So I don't think that was really good for his opportunities, because whoever is in this position will have to play special teams. But, you know, that's all the John Rain takes I have. I think Pruitt will have a legitimate chance if he shows out well in the preseason, just given his experience.
Yeah, I think it's important that you mentioned it, that Rothstein did, like, he was getting reps with the veterans right away, so he's not going to have to work his way up starting with the third, fourth string guys. So that, to me, definitely signals that they have some level of significant interest in him. So that's going to be one to watch, certainly, over the rest of preseason, as someone who could kind of come in and shake up the depth chart late in the process. All right, let's see. I know there were a couple questions that kind of dovetail nicely together. One was about any sort of defensive line reinforcements we'd like to see the Falcons sign from Darrell Moore. And then also another question from Torin that was, you know, what do we expect the Falcons to do with the current cap that they have? So I think those two kind of go together a little bit, because my answer is either going to be offensive or defensive line to that question. But I'll let you guys get in your ideas about who you think or what you think the Falcons should spend their money on. Dave, I'll let you get the first crack at this. Who would you go out and sign with the Falcons cap space if you had the GM hat on?
Yeah, maybe I do. This is the GM hat.
I thought it was Ryan Pace. Yeah.
Guys, if the Falcons don't sign the exact players you want, I always say it at the Falcoholic on Twitter, because if the Falcons don't do exactly what you want, it's because Dave told them not to.
Yeah.
So if we don't get Roquan Smith, it's because Dave told them not to.
They really value Dave's opinion.
You know, I've been looking for somebody to do live recaps, and it was so nice of you to volunteer for that. That's amazing. Thank you. For me, the answer is still the same as it was like a month ago, which is Quentin Spain. I still would like to see them not really gamble with left guard, but I've also accepted at this point that we're going to either get Jalen Mayfield or a guy who will be making his first career start at left guard. So knowing that, I would still like to see them shore up the offensive and defensive lines. I don't have a ton of candidates in mind beyond Spain, because I've been very laser focused on that possibility. But to me, this is clearly a situation, especially with the injuries piling up on the defensive line, where adding players is probably a good idea. And I think the fact that they haven't to this point tells you they'll probably be actively looking to do so once they cut down to 53 and there's a ton of guys flooding the market. So we'll see, but I still expect that to happen. I still think that's where the cap space is going to end up going.
All right. Yep. Yeah, that one makes a lot of sense to me. You know, I'm very much in favor of Spain. Adnan, who would you sign if you could choose?
Spain is a very good one. The name that I threw out in our round table, I think the one round table I've done in the past month, sorry, Dave, was Nick Easton. Just because there is a Terry Fontenot connection there. Easton played for the New Orleans Saints before has a lot of experience playing left guard, which is, I think, the biggest position of need for the Falcons right now. It's not going to be Jalen Mayfield out there. It's Elijah Wilkins is going to get his crack at it at that position. It's Elijah Wilkins, my mistake. But yeah, I just want the team to bring in some more competition for that left guard position, whether that's Spain or whether that's Easton. I really don't care. I just want a decent average or even below average veteran, because I think that's a vast step up from what this team had at left guard last year.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Will, who would you go after?
I agree with both of those guys. I don't really have a number one person on my list, because generally I think that the Falcons are at this point probably, you know, they're going to do what they've been doing, which is injuries happen. You need some money for general, you know, maintenance to make sure you've got enough bodies out there. They've got more than enough money to have that covered. But I think what we're going to see is once roster cutdowns begin to happen and they've had their eye on certain guys throughout the league, that's kind of where I think this team is from a roster building standpoint. They're going to try to snipe guys with upside, get them in here, get them to be part of this kind of at the ground floor, really indoctrinate them into how they want to do things and build that up. And I think that they're, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if we see them go into the season with a little bit more money than, you know, we might expect. And partially, I think part of that is going to be because they do believe that attrition happens throughout the season. And if they are making something of the year, like they want to have some money to maybe pick and choose a specific spot to go fill if a big starter does go down. I don't think it's out of the question that they do realize throughout the course of the preseason that they are, you know, not at where they want to be at left guard, or that they do need an extra reserve defensive tackle or something like that. And they go sign one of these veterans who's just been on the market all summer. It's kind of well known that they're going to get invited maybe once the preseason's over, and that teams are just in negotiations or talking or eyeing them and just kind of keeping them away until they actually want to sign them when the season starts. All of that's in play, but I really do think that we should be paying attention to the roster cutdowns, because that is where I think the Falcons are going to be looking at who's released, who can we sign, and that's where we're going to see them start to really move that money around, and then probably keeping some going into the season in case they do need to make or choose to make one big move then.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there certainly are names out there. You know, I mentioned Eric Flowers as a guy. Quentin Spain, certainly someone that I'm a fan of too. On the defensive side, you know, I don't know what they're really looking for at this point. Like, if they're looking for another nose tackle type, it could be, you know, we've mentioned Linval Joseph and Brandon Williams, and there's guys like Malik Jackson out there if they're looking for more of a pass rusher. You know, Sheldon Richardson still kicking around. Adam Butler's kind of interesting, most recently from the Dolphins. Productive pass rusher, rotational guy. They're looking for more juice there. You know, at edge, there's a couple guys, right? Like Alex Okafor, Benson Mayoa is a guy that I think Benson Mayoa is kind of underrated, right? But I think they're pretty much set at edge. Like, I don't think that they have like a great edge group, but I think they've got four guys that they want to play and see what they have. So they're not really going to be itching to add another veteran there, even though that might help. I think the it's either going to come probably at offensive line or like interior defensive line is where they're going to make an addition if one comes, but maybe we just get lucky and like Derek Tangelo is great or something like that. Cause the name is great. So we have half the equation already filled. Like Derek Tangelo, that is an all pro name. Now we just need the all pro play to complete the prophecy of Derek Tangelo. You know, he's been impressive. Don't get me wrong. So, I mean, the fact that they haven't run out to sign another veteran starter should give you guys some level of like they at least are interested in what they have to the point where they don't need to like, oh god, we need to go get someone right now. Like,
I just don't know who you're adding at this point that like significantly changes the trajectory of this team in 2022. And at this point, like, give your young guys all the reps. This year's about finding answers to do that. You don't need to plug in some, you know, 31-year-old kind of veteran journeyman who there were no Jamon Browns, right? Like, we don't need that. Just,
please, no.
Just give the guys their reps and let's see what they're made of.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense. All right. Let's see what else we got here. We got from Caesar. He wants to know, he's going to be going to his first game in Atlanta this year, and he wants to know what our recommendations are for food or hotels near the stadium, I assume he's asking. So yeah, I mean, I don't live in Atlanta. I have been there before, obviously. I've been to some games. Downtown, there are some really cool hotels. Like if you've ever heard of the Marriott Marquis, it's an expensive hotel, but it's a really unique, cool hotel. It's in a lot of sci-fi movies, actually. You'll probably recognize the interior if you go in and if you've seen a lot of sci-fi movies. I think it's been in like Minority Report and like Blade Runner and things like that, because it looks very sci-fi. So it's a cool hotel. In terms of like value hotels, I don't know too much about that. But so I'll let these guys, I'll leave it open to the people that live in Atlanta. But I know like Will and Adnan probably have better recommendations for you. So Will, I'll let you get the first crack here.
Yeah, I'm trying to look up this place because it's right near, you know, obviously Centennial Olympic Park and the stadium and all of that good stuff. It had really, really good fried chicken.
Was it Hattie B's?
It may be
Hattie B's one.
Is that within walking distance by like the Ferris wheel and you kind of go back in towards the city a little bit?
I think it might be.
That I would definitely check that place out. I went there one of the days that I was working when the Super Bowl was down here in Atlanta, and kind of covering that, and went and got just absolutely really good down home, like fried chicken, mashed potatoes, fried okra, like all of that good stuff. Really decently priced as well. I was actually shocked by how big the portions were for how inexpensive it was. So I would definitely check that out if you're staying in and around the stadium.
Yeah, that's a good one. Adnan, you have any recommendations for that area?
I mean, if you want to go next to the stadium, there's this really good seafood place that I can't quite find right now. It's right next to State Farm Arena, which when you get down to Atlanta, the Mercedes-Benz Stadium is right next to State Farm Arena. But I mean, there's if you're looking for like a sit down like sports bar type place, there's a Hudson Grill that's like within walking distance. If you just want to go there, chill for a little bit before the game, it's right next to Centennial Olympic Park. I definitely recommend checking out Centennial Olympic Park if you've never been to Atlanta. It's the old Olympic Park. You have all of the names. You have the Olympic rings over there. It has this really cool fountain which shoots up water. You have all of the names of all the like famous people, the Olympians over there. It's a really cool place to go as a tourist. And you know, there's a bunch of stuff that's within maybe not quite walking distance, but within like a few minutes of a drive as well. If you're into the aquarium, it's right next to the stadium. Mm-hmm. There's the World of Coca-Cola if you're into that. The museum, the center of the Museum for Human Rights, the Human Rights Center, which is is there nearby as well.
Georgia Tech's campus is right there. Go check that out.
Yeah, Atlanta's just like a really cool place. With when you're downtown, there's just so much to do, and it's all within one condensed area. So
yeah,
I would definitely recommend, if you're going to a game, I definitely recommend making a whole day out of it. Go to the tailgate beforehand at the Gulch, which is right across the street from the stadium. That's where all the tailgating happens. And then after the game, you know, just check out some of these cool tourist attractions and some of these cool places in Atlanta, because, you know, you're going to have, the game will end at like 4 p.m. You'll have like the entire rest of the day left to yourself. So, yeah, definitely it's all within that little area.
Yeah. And definitely take MARTA also. Like if you're coming from the airport, it's like $2.50 to get from the airport to wherever your hotel is. As long as there's a MARTA station like close to your hotel, if you're staying downtown, there probably is one. It's going to be like $2.50 to take MARTA, or it's going to be like, you know, $15-$20 to take an Uber or something like that. So definitely take MARTA. It's pretty quick, pretty regular. And there's a MARTA station like right by the stadium too. So I would pretty much always recommend like using that as your transit, because parking there's kind of a nightmare.
Yeah,
parking anywhere. Yeah.
It's the one after the Mercedes-Benz Stadium exit too. Is the new one. So yeah, definitely do that. And I found the name of the restaurant. It's Sweet George's Juke Joint.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, it sounds as good as it is.
Yeah, it's literally right across from the hotel I'm staying at Dragon Con. So it's there right you across go. From the Ritz. Yeah.
Shout out Dragon Con. And then also the beer garden on the street. It's on the other street between Centennial Olympic Park and like CNN Center and all that. I'm blanking on the name right now, but that's a really good place too.
And if you are driving, I don't recommend getting parking right next to the stadium because they will upcharge the shit out of that.
Yeah.
They'll like charge like $60 on game days.
Oh yeah. No, it's terrible.
My go-to whenever I'm parking, try to find parking at the 250 William Street lot, which is, it's like a block from the stadium. It's just like, it's just a walk. It's a straight shot right to the stadium. You pass the Waffle House there nearby. You pass the Ferris wheel. Then you just go across the street to the stadium. But normally parking there is like $10, $15 max is what I've experienced. So definitely don't park right next to the stadium because they will upcharge you.
If you can afford to like not park and just take MARTA or whatever, that's going to be better. It's going to be better for you.
You have to, like, if you're going with your car, if you're like,
driving. If you have a car or whatever. There you go. You guys have gotten the primer there on the situation downtown. All right. I think we had a couple more here. Let me double check. We had from Darrell Moore. He's asking, how do you guys think our pass rushing unit will compare to last year's? Yeah, well, right. It has to be better, right? They had 17 sacks, league low sacks, league low pressures. So it has to be better. I assume that they'll get closer to like 30 sacks, and a more like normal, not like ridiculously low, but like a more normal amount of pressure. That would be my thoughts.
The crazy thing is, if they had 30 sacks last year, they still would have been last or like tied for last.
That's how far behind they were. Exactly. So they could double their sacks and still be like mediocre at best.
I think last year's team had the second fewest sacks in franchise history. And the team with the fewest, that was like the lockout shortened season when they played like 8 or 9 games.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, on a game by game basis, it was much better. It was like almost elite, you know. But yeah, they're going to be better. I think we're going to see more of an emphasis on the blitzing from the linebackers too. Like Rayshon Evans, is his entire role on passing downs is just going to be to blitz because everyone knows he can't cover. You know he can't cover. I know he can't cover. Rayshon Evans knows he can't cover. Like they're just going to blitz it. Yeah, DP's definitely knows he can't cover. So they're just going to, that man played so much on third downs at training camp. They just know, like, they're just going to blitz him. Like every time they can, they're going to send Rayshon Evans on a blitz. So maybe that'll help. You know, he's been a good blitzer before. And you know, I think that the young pass rushers they have, that can't hurt things to have that, in their back pocket either. So that's certainly, I think we are hoping for positive steps there. Certainly.
I definitely think that the pass rush group, to your point with the blitzing, is going to be bigger. I don't know if it's going to be better, but I think it's going to be much more inclusive because this all comes back to DMPs, you know, essentially saying what they put in 60% of their defense that they wanted to last year. I really think that extra 40 is a lot of the more nuanced, exotic stuff that is meant to mess with quarterbacks. And a lot of that has to do with blitzing. So, you know, I agree with you, Kevin. Rashawn Evans had a really, really nice kind of delayed blitz around one of the ends that forced Marcus Mariota. It should have been a sack in a game. It would have been a sack, but he got a pass off because they just held the whistle. But I like what they're doing with some of the stunts, using the linebackers, getting them involved, because I do think that that's going to really benefit Grady Jarrett, who has had a really good camp so far. I think that them moving him out a little bit more into kind of that like 3-5, like a little hybrid, moving him in where he can get a one-on-one matchup because they're bringing a linebacker or something, it could be his best season that we've seen in a while, because I think that they're going to understand he's their best pass rusher with his hand in the dirt, and they're going to find ways to get the guys who are standing up involved so that he has a better opportunity to really create, because he's still that type of player and he's still that good and he's still their best pass rusher. So I think they're going to have more options, younger options, fresher legs to throw at defense or offenses. And I think that just kind of by a collective effort, I think that this team should hopefully at least crack 20.
Yeah. I sure hope so.
About that 60% like comment, if you increase Atlanta's sacks last year by 40%, they would have had like 26, and that still would have been last in the NFL.
Yep.
That just goes to show just how far back this team was. It's like there's like the pack. It's like the it's like that scene in Moneyball. It's like, oh, there's like good pass rushing teams. There's bad pass rushing teams, then there's 50 feet of crap, and then, you know, there was the Falcons. So they were just that bad last year.
Yeah, they were.
Like, there's no way they can be that bad again.
Yeah, I sure hope so. I mean, I think some of it was bad luck. Some of it was the teams they faced. Some of it was, like, you know, them just being really bad. But I don't think they're going to be that bad again this year, certainly.
But the thing, they were playing some rookie quarterbacks, too. Like, they it's were. Not like they were facing this gauntlet of just like Tom Brady's out there.
Right.
They faced Brady a couple times. They actually got a few times.
They got sacks in those games generally. So it wasn't Brady's fault. So
yeah, they couldn't get sacks against like David Blow and Trevor Siemian. You know,
the Blowhard, you know, David Blowhard or whatever. I don't know. I'm trying to come up with good quarterback nicknames for the preseason play by play. So give me a chance here, guys. I'm workshopping these, but
you have until Friday, but yeah
I have until Friday.
I'd say like closer to 30, like, you know, I think they'll still be like bottom five, but it won't be just like an abhorrent embarrassment like it was last.
That's the hope.
That's
dream.
A step up. That's a big step up.
That would be big. Yeah. Like, oh, this is like a normal pass rush. Okay. It's a bad normal pass rush.
Historically terrible.
Yeah.
I know Dean Pease wants like a great defense, and he's, you know, consarnate. He's sick of mediocre defenses in Atlanta, dadgummit. But I think we're going to have to wait a little bit for that. And I think all of us are so beaten down by how bad the pass rush has been. Yeah. Like, just anywhere near a league average would make me incredibly happy. So. Yeah. There.
Yeah.
I think too, sorry, Kevin, last point, but I think we need to prepare ourselves for a little bit of a chaotic approach defensively, because when you're not able to go toe-to-toe talent-wise, you inherently want to create a benefit by like dragging them down into just the muck and make everything confusing, even if it's like borderline unsound at times, like things you're not really supposed to be doing. That's almost how you level the playing field, because it's you're making it so like just maelstrom like that they can't really do what they want to do, even if that exposes you on the back end to some big explosive plays. I think that they're really going to get risky this season to try to make something happen, because they don't know what their talent level is compared to some of these other teams. It's not the 2007 Giants, who can just line up with four guys and know that they can beat you. They've got to really get creative, and I think it's going to be really risky at times, but I think it's also going to be really fun and rewarding for stretches.
Yeah, that's the part of it that you like about that stuff, is that it's going to be fun to watch the type of like just craziness that they're going to throw out at times. And I think we could always look forward to that. And I always enjoy fun. Like, if you can't be good, be fun, you know? Like, that's the next best thing, because there's nothing worse than, you know, being boring and bad. Dirt cutter. excuse me. Sorry. I got something caught in my throat there. But okay. We're going to get to one more quick thing here that I saw Ollie put in the chat, because I wasn't paying attention to the chat. But what second year guys do you guys think we're going to break out this year? Second year players. Dave, I'll go to you first on that one. I know I'm all in on Team Richie Grant. You know, the breakout's already begun. But do you have anyone in particular, Dave?
You said you'd go to me first, and then you stole my guy.
Well, no, you can. I wasn't going to talk about it in depth. You know, you can talk about it in depth now. But
yeah, I think the whole thing with Richie Grant is like so many people were so down on him because he didn't play a lot aside from special teams last year. And, you know, it seemed like a fiasco because he was a second round pick. But I really think, you know, people are quibbling with like, oh, he made a big play off a deflected pass. It's, you know, it's only training camp, et cetera. But I've been a big believer in Grant basically since he got here. Eric Robinson kind of talked me into it, you know, with how excited he was about him. But the talent is there. The opportunity is there. Like, Richie Grant is an obvious breakout candidate, and I think we're going to see it. I'm as confident of him having a great season as just about anything with this team this year. So he's definitely my pick.
Yeah. Yeah. That one I think is the clear one. And I think so far he's definitely lived up to the hype in camp. But yeah, Adnan, who are you hoping for?
I mean, like, yeah, Richie Grant is the guy. Like, you really want Richie Grant to succeed. He was a high second round pick last year, and you kind of really need him to succeed. But yeah, he was fantastic in camp. I don't know if Jalen Hawkins technically broke out last
year. Second year in this defense, yeah. Yeah.
So it's like, you know, I would go with that pick because I don't know if he didn't. If we're not counting him as technically a breakout player last year, I would go with him, the other safety, because, you know, he's a ball hawk. Like, he has looked, you know, very instinctive around the ball. On Saturday, I watched and I recorded him intercepting a high pass from Marcus Mariota. And it was one of those, like, interceptions where it was pretty impressive because he really had to, like, get his hands up really quickly to, like, to secure that pick. It didn't just fall around his chest.
It was instinct.
Yeah, and I mean, that's something you can't teach. He's someone who I think will lead this team in interceptions this year. And, you know, I think that I'm cautiously optimistic that we're going to have a very, very strong young safety tandem for years to come. And because if you can get two very good safeties, I shouldn't say strong safeties because that's technically a position, but if you can come away with two very good safeties, you know, outside of the first round of the draft, Richie Grant was a high second rounder, but Jalen Hawkins was what, a fourth rounder. That's the foundation to building a good defense, having some of these really good day three contributors like what Jalen Hawkins is. And I think the secondary this season is going to be very good. You know, I'm very skeptical still about the pass rush, because I think they're still very, very young. But I think this secondary has a chance to really be one of the better secondaries in the league.
Yeah, I agree. I think we should get excited about the secondary. Even if the pass rush can't quite bring everything to bear, I think the secondary will be good and be the strong point of the defense for sure. All right, Will, your breakout player.
Yeah, no, I mean, both of those answers are correct.
Yeah.
I can only hope that Richie Grant and Jalen Hawkins go on to have the long, successful partnership that DeMonte Casey and Keanu Neal had together. But nobody. Okay, just leave me out to dry.
I mean, I was gonna.
I don't even think they were listening.
I didn't know
they're
if
both
it,
looking at their
yeah,
phones.
Yeah, no, they're both. No, they've been listening. Done for a while. Yeah.
I was listening
at the end of the show. Like, that's
he
not
was cool. trying to like he was trying to calculate like, wait, how long were they?
Uh-huh.
That brief season, that was beautiful. Yeah.
As soon as you mentioned safety tandems, my mind immediately went to Thomas Dekku and William Ward.
Yeah, that's what I was. Yeah. That's where
exactly,
I
exactly because that's
yeah.
the natural. That's what makes yeah. it a joke, guys.
Exactly.
All right.
Good job. Great job by you. Yeah.
Glad we're all on the same page now.
Yeah.
No, I'm going to go away from the secondary. I'm actually, it's not even a pass rusher, even though I think a lot of people view him in this way. It's going to be Ade Ogundeji. I think the coaching staff, we clearly saw that they respect the hell out of what he did as a rookie, you know, just the type of demeanor that he has, the working, you know, capability that he has just day in and day out. I think he's going to make this run defense a lot better in year two. Every 3-4 defense needs that kind of strong side outside linebacker that can set the edge, that can really turn the run back inside. And I think that that's going to be his big role. Arthur Smith, you know, said this past week that they figured out really what Ade does well, and they're kind of not asking him to do too much outside of that. To me, that indicates the pass rush, things like that. But they said that the things that he does really well, like, he excels in, and they don't even need to correct him. It's teach tape, essentially. They would just point at it and say, do it like this. That's how you should do it. So all of that, the consistency in his reps, just points to me as a really solid run defender. Somebody who just is in the right place every time, focuses on doing his job, which is something that I don't think the defense did enough last season. You had guys kind of freelancing to some degree, which impacted the whole unit negatively at times. I think they're going to count on Ade to be just an anchor on early downs. And I think that if the Falcons defense, run defense, gets better this season, that he will have a big part to play in that. it may not be as flashy, certainly, as Richie Grant or even Darren Hall or Avery Williams, who I think both belong in that conversation because they've both had some pretty good plays throughout training camp so far. But the bread and butter of this defense could really be Ade and kind of the workmanlike stuff that he does that goes a little bit under the radar.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely like Ade. I was thinking about talking about him, so I'm glad you brought him up. So that makes it easy for me to talk about Avery Williams now instead, because whatever you were expecting Avery Williams to be at running back, it was kind of like, I think you could have had a huge spectrum of things like, oh, he's not going to be able to do anything at running back, to like, he's going to be this really dynamic sort of jitterbug rusher, or like, he's not going to really play running back. It's just, you know, it's just a sort of a change to make it easy to keep him on the roster. And I'm sure that's part of it, but as a receiver, he is extremely talented. Like, he immediately took to being a receiver out of the backfield and in other places that the team has asked me not to disclose. that he is really impressive as a receiver. I think he's going to have a role as a receiver, and like early. I don't know how many carries he's going to get. Probably not many. I mean, he'll probably be an emergency guy that they call on if, you know, we have injuries at the position or whatever. But even then, you know, the next game, they'll probably activate like a Quadri Olison or whatever to take the carries. And Avery Williams is just going to be a nice receiving guy for you. Obviously, he's got his ability as a returner. But he's a guy that I think will have a role on offense that might surprise some people. And I think that... I'm really excited to see how they utilize him, because it's going to be exciting. I think it's going to be fun. It's going to be one of those fun things for a guy changing positions. Just really is like same with someone like Troy Anderson, like how quickly can he adjust? How quickly can he get on the field? And if all we've seen so far is any indication, it could be kind of soon. So fun little tease for you guys there on Avery Williams, but he's cool. He is a natural, as they say. So same like just with Felipe Franks, some guys, they change positions and it's like, wait, why weren't you playing this before? Like, you are clearly a natural here. So sometimes it just works out that way.
Felipe Franks, like that's us down on the job here. Yeah.
No one asked about Felipe Franks. Maybe I just talked about Franks so much like the last week that everyone's like, no, we're good.
I was going to say, how are we an hour and 10 minutes into the show and this is the first like real Felipe Franks reference?
Yeah. Well, Dave, you know, we need to let Dave talk about Felipe Franks. So Dave, please take it away.
No, my favorite thing about Felipe Franks is I have been prophetically joking about him since last year, last spring. Like, I was like, oh, he seems like a guy the Falcons will be interested in because he's big and athletic. And then like, maybe he'll play another position because he's big and athletic. Like, every single time I make a joke about him, it comes true. So I'm kind of afraid to keep doing it, honestly.
Be careful what you wish for. It's like the monkey paw. Yeah.
Dave, you have a gift here. You have an opportunity.
You could make Felipe Franks the next Tom Brady, you know, but maybe a better person.
The better person thing I'll work very hard on.
Yeah, make sure that's in the wish before you use the monkey paw. So
yeah, the, you know, Felipe Franks probably giving all his money to charity.
Yeah. Well, Crick, you know.
I've mentioned it in our group multiple times. I think that this is a 4D. My conspiracy theory is that this is a 4D chess move by Arthur Smith. He wants to push this Felipe Franks thing for one trick play, like 2 or 3 years.
That's all this is about.
Yeah, one trick play, and it'll be one that like wins the Falcons the game and goes for like a huge touchdown, where he just like throws it back to Franks, and Franks just like slings it downfield to one of our speedy receivers. I think that's how this began, but then I think Felipe Franks was just so good in training camp.
Right.
Like, you know what? You know, we actually have a spot for this guy.
This guy actually plays tight end really well. I don't, you know, I think he's looked better than I think any of us ever
imagined. He's been
imagined.
Really good.
Yes.
Like, he looked really good.
Yes, like really natural as a receiver. I mean, I haven't seen him block, but clearly Arthur Smith doesn't need every one of his tight ends to block. I mean, look at Anthony Firkser. Like,
I don't think you're going to see him block.
Yeah, Anthony Firkser don't block. Arthur Smith don't care. So,
Pitts isn't going to block.
Right. Kyle. I mean, I've seen him block once, and it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. No, Kyle Pitts, they have to, like, get in the way. You know, they're not going to be depended on to be, like, standing up an edge guy. in line, but you know, they need to be able to at least get in the way. But I think he can do that. You know, I think that that's something he can handle. But yeah, Felipe Franks. Yeah. Anybody else want to wax poetic about Franks before we wrap it up? I think that's a good topic to end the show on. So
no, just that he's been. I think we like Stott as like a joke. You know, I think your first like video or two, Kevin, where it's like, oh yeah, Felipe Franks got this like catch in one on one. Like, yeah. Oh yeah, it's like, you know, Felipe Franks. Like,
it was funny at first, yeah.
And then it's like it just kept happening.
Yep, yep.
And he kept getting receptions, and then we're like, oh shit.
It's like, oh, here's him beating like a safety, and here's him beating a cornerback. And
here's him trucking deep floor, you know, on his way to the end zone.
We've seen non-football players transition to the NFL successfully at what position? Tight end. And so, you know, of the positions, I'm not going to say it's like the easiest to learn, but I do think it's the one most conducive to just some natural athleticism. Go out there, you know, we're not asking you to run 50 yards down the field and beat a corner who can run a 4-3. We're asking you to get in front of a linebacker or a safety, box him out and make a contested catch. Felipe can check a lot of those boxes, and he's got a little bit more, I think, speed and wiggle than people would expect. I think it's going to take maybe a full season of really working at this position for him to improve in those areas. But in the short term, red zone, short yardage, gadget plays, I mean, I think that he's going to be, to Adnan's point, like a little bit bigger of a part of this offense than maybe we all expected when this first began.
And I mean, like on Saturday, and Will was there, he can attest to this. He was the star of the show on Saturday. Like legitimately, he had that like truck on Tabor and 7-on-7s, and he had maybe the best catch of the day, which was like late on in 11-on-11s, where Ritter threw him the ball. I think he lost his footing a little bit.
Yeah, he was falling down.
Yeah, and he just like makes this amazing diving catch like near the sidelines, and that's in addition to his like his good couple plays as a quarterback. Like I think his one like throw on 11-on-11 was just this like perfect pass, which went like 30 yards, and then like the very next play he got like 10-15 yards scrambling. So I mean, he was legitimately the star of the show on Saturday.
I do think it's worth pumping the brakes a little bit. Like it's not, this is not 2004 Madden Michael Vick that we're unleashing. Like it's still just, he's against like the second and third team guys, but he'll be the most fun player to watch in the preseason for sure.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
If he has like two touchdowns against the Lions this week,
he'll get drafted in fantasy leagues.
Oh, he's gonna start getting drafted. Yeah, he's gonna start getting drafted. Yeah, it'd be hilarious.
But yeah, no, the thing is, I think he's done good. Like, he's not gonna be like out there getting regular season snaps over Ferks or like Kyle Pitts.
Probably not. Yes. But, definitely not Kyle Pitts.
Yeah, but I think he's doing well enough to actually make this roster as a tight end.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I think he would. I think he would. He's going to make it as a quarterback because they're going to keep listening him there, I guess. But
yeah, but the thing that's huge for the team, if they can like, if Pitts can make this team as like a tight end, as like the fourth tight end, like that saves a roster spot because he's your emergency quarterback. Like you will still have three active quarterbacks playing, except Felipe Franks can also play tight end. So yeah. I mean, I think that's what the team really wants. And Arthur Smith was nothing but complimentary about Felipe Franks at the press conference. Like, I went out of my way to ask him about Felipe Franks in the press conference, and I noted it in a tweet. Like, Arthur Smith, like, literally let out a smile after I asked him about Felipe Franks. And, you know, Arthur Smith is, like, as stone-faced as they come. And, you know, he was just saying how amazing it is coaching Felipe Franks and how special he is. So I think that the hype is like real with the coaching staff, at least. And I think they want him to make this roster because then they can save that roster spot and use it on another position as well.
Yeah.
I will say, like, long-term though, I worry about Arthur Smith getting like Sean Payton disease if this works out. And if Avery Williams works out, where like, he's just going to be convinced he can turn anybody into any position he wants. He's going to go power mad with it. Like
maybe he can. Maybe he can.
You know,
maybe he can. I don't know. So,
yep. And they're just as we say that, you know, around the NFL posts a tweet, you know, Saints Taysom Hill on switch to tight end. This isn't what I want, but it's what's best for the team. Then you got Felipe Franks switching to tight end, doesn't say anything negative. So, you know, yeah, at least Franks is actually a good tight end, though.
Taysom Hill is the discount Felipe Franks. I'm
exactly.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's time. You know, literally the discount. Well, a discount, you know, not necessarily literally, but.
I don't know what Taysom is complaining about. Isn't he like one of the highest paid tight ends in the league right now?
Yeah.
I do think if we're going to game this out, though, and do roster predictions and things like that, I know people have been talking, you know, 6 defensive linemen, 5 defensive linemen. Like, what does that look like? You know, generally your tight ends, especially the guys further down on the roster, are key special teams bodies on your like kickoff units, your coverage units in the middle of the field. They're the ones kind of setting those wedges, breaking those wedges when they used to exist. But if Felipe Franks is one of your tight ends, I don't really know if he's a guy that you're utilizing across the board on special teams because of his importance as your third quarterback. So does that maybe mean that they would go 5 defensive linemen and go another linebacker, because that is the type of player who you would fill in normally in that same role? It's usually linebackers, fullbacks, and tight ends. I don't think they're carrying multiple fullbacks. So right. I think maybe could that give us an answer or an early indication as to how this roster could shake out if Felipe does take up one of those tight end spots?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm wondering definitely if it's going to be that they just keep him as a third quarterback and just sort of be like, okay, we're just keeping him as a third quarterback. We're counting him as a quarterback, but they keep a fourth tight end anyway. Yeah. And then they probably like that right now, how I'm doing the roster math is they keep 4 tight ends, 3 quarterbacks, 5 wide receivers and 9 offensive linemen. So, you know, so they only keep 5 wide receivers, which that's going to be hard too, right? Because you're probably saying goodbye to like Auden Tate or Geronimo Allison or Kadarius Hodge, mm-hmm. one of those guys, at least one of those guys, if not 2 of those guys. So that's going to be a tough cut to make too. But like you said, for the special teams reasons, I think keeping that extra tight end might be more important. It might be also
if they decide to do that for that mm-hmm. reason, that could open up another spot for one of those guys that you just listed. They may not need that fourth tight end if Felipe Franks kind of fills that role.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll have to see. Like, the special teams drills, they haven't shown like a ton of, we're going to see more of that, I think, in the preseason. You know, no offense, but that wasn't like the focus of my coverage while I was at training camp. But we'll see it in the preseason. If Franks is out there on all of those special teams plays, then you have it's a great clue as to like, oh, this guy is, you know, going to be playing a lot. Like, he's going to be active. He's going to be playing special teams and he's going to be the ace in the hole at tight end. So, very exciting. At least we have, you know, fun position switch players to talk about here. But yeah, we've got preseason coming up too, guys. On Friday, we will be having our live play-by-play during the first preseason game. So that'll be a lot of fun. We'll be back tomorrow, Wednesday night, for the Falcoholic Live's normal Wednesday show, breaking down all this stuff in detail with camp, preseason, all that talk. So thank you to all the patrons for hanging out, getting your questions in. It was a lot of fun. Thank you to everyone listening, watching this after the show is over. We appreciate that too. And we will see you guys next time. Before we take off, I want to thank all my guests. First of all, Will McFadden. He's at Will McFadden on Twitter, host of the Believe in Falcons podcast. Will, anything else you'd like to plug?
No, just some stories coming on the Falcoholic throughout the rest of training camp, kind of breaking down guys that I've talked to, players I'm excited to watch, notable things that are occurring, all of that good stuff. So find that at the Falcoholic.
Yeah, excellent stuff there. We also have with us Adnan Ikic at Say Which Way. Adnan, anything you're working on you'd like to plug?
Oh, no.
No? Okay, cool. Great. Excellent. I like it. then we've got Dave Cho at the Falcoholic himself. Dave, thank you for coming on once again. And anything you would like to plug?
Just excited for Adnan to pick up the live recaps. I think it's going to be great.
Looking forward to it.
It's going to be a paragraph per drive. Each paragraph will be awesome. So yeah. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, I feel like that will be Dante's like 7th circle of hell, writing a paragraph per drive about this Falcons team this year.
It's at least the 7th. It might be the 8th. So, but anyways, aside from that, I am looking forward to just reading some of the upcoming coverage we have for preseason. Obviously, everything right before the season and roster cuts. It's one of my favorite times of the year, just seeing the team take shape. So look for everybody's write-ups on that. And let's go Falcons, I guess.
I will revise my answer. I will cover our preseason coverage on Friday. Kevin and I will be watching the preseason game, the Falcons Lions, starting at 6, and we will be doing our play-by-play and analysis, you know, of the game as we do every preseason game, and we'll be doing that for the entire preseason. So yeah, watch with us because, you know, I'm sure we do a better job than the CW folks.
That, I mean, look, I just, like, it's not even meant as a slight. Like, what, like, TV person would ever care about the Falcons, like, third and fourth string players? That would, like, would you even, would, like, I don't expect these people to know their names, but we are sickos and degenerates, so we know all of their
names. We'll know.
Like, we'll know the intricacies of the exact roster battle they're fighting for and their chances of making the 53-man roster. So you can't get that analysis anywhere else, folks. So
we'll be talking about these undrafted guys, like the guys we've actually been like talking about.
Yep.
Because, you know, we have to talk about something in the dead period.
Well,
we'll know.
Oh yeah, big time. So definitely check that out, folks. Thanks again, everyone, for tuning in. Thank you, patrons, for the questions, for the support. We really appreciate you guys. Like I said, the Patron Fantasy League, I know everyone's asking about it. It's coming together as we speak. I'm putting together the lists for the leagues. Thank you. If you haven't yet filled out the like Google form, guys, put that in for sure so I can get your name down. There'll be an opportunity also to add yourself, you know, before the draft and stuff like that if we have any late entries. But yeah, appreciate that. And that is coming. So don't worry about that, folks. But again, thanks everyone for watching. We'll see you guys next time on the Falcoholic Live. Until then, guys, have a great night.